I'm Zheng Yuguo from Microsoft Research Asia, and this talk is about optimizing data shuffling in data parallel computation by understanding the user-defined function. So yes, we target the same user-defined function problem, but with a different approach. Instead of treating this user-defined function as a black box, we try to turn them into gray boxes and extract some code properties to help the existing optimizer. So this work is a collaboration with my colleagues in MSR Asia and Microsoft Bing. So here's an example. Developers write their programs on the client machine and then send to the scheduler, which is hosted in the cloud. And then the scheduler will find out where are the input data, which are typically stored on a set of machines. They are partitioned, and each of them is a sequence of records. And then scale will apply a set of local processing and extract some records from the input data. In this case, there are some records with some URL as their primary keys. Then the job will try to do some data shuffling across the machines. In this case, it's try to hash these records by URL so that the same, so the records with the same URL will be put together and stored on the same set of machines. And then a further round of local processing. In this case, it tries to reverse the URL to a URL prime. And here we have another set of records, and then further round of data shuffling, and then further round of local processing. OK, so the shuffling is actually the dominant cost, as we have investigated together with the production team. For example, there's a 1 month chase from the production bed, which tells us that the shuffling actually contributes about 200 petabyte shuffling, which can account for 6% of the cross-port traffic. So given this cost, why these shuffling stages are necessary? So they're introduced to achieve a certain level of for data properties or data partition properties, or DTP in short here. So in the data parallel program like MapReduce, Reduce actually explicitly requires that the records share the same reduced key must be put together. So here we call the cluster, the URL, that is a DPP, a data partition property. And this is the same for the second shuffling stage, that the URL prime must be clustered, which we call another DPP. Actually, some shuffling stages are not necessary. They can be eliminated. For example, here for the second shuffling stage, we can see the input data are actually already clustered on URL prime. And the output data is also required to be clustered on URL prime. So it's actually quite safe to eliminate the second shuffling stage. This shuffling stage is unnecessary, can be removed. So why they are not removed? In the kind of practice, so basically, the previous talk have already told us the existing optimizer can only make some conservative assumption about user-defined function. So this functional property is gone, and it can only consume that this URL prime has no cluster property, or basically it's not no property at all. But in the real case, that this reverse function is actually a one-to-one function, which means that given the same input URL, the same URL prime will always be given. So that is what we call a one-to-one functional property. But this knowledge is not given to the optimizer, so they cannot optimize that. So that is the optimizer will convert the ground truth class URL to non-URL prime. And the pseudo work is trying to solve this problem. It's trying to extract the functional or code properties of the user-defined function, and then reasoning DPP across user-defined functions at the shuffling stages, and finally help the existing optimizer remove the unnecessary shuffling stages to reduce network and disk I/O. To be more precise, the next slide we'll be talking about first what are the DPP defined in our work and how DPP change across shuffling stages, and then about the functional properties, what are the functional properties we defined, how DPP change across user-defined functions, and how we actually identify the functional properties from these user-defined functions. And of course, there are some optimization flow later, which are trivial. OK, so here is the DPP defined in our work. So basically, there's two dimensions here. One is within a partition, another is across partition. So this is for the previous case, there's a class of the own URL. So within a partition, we want this the record with the same URL must be contiguous. That is a DPP within a partition. And then across partition, we want that the records with the same URL must be put on the same partition. So that is called partitioned. So with this both contiguous and partitioned, we call this data property DPP clustered. And we also have another set of other DPP. For the rest of three, they are not interested in our work, but in theory, we can easily incorporate it into our framework. Also, we can see actually there's a strong weak relationship between this DPP. And a stronger DPP actually can imply a weaker DPP. And then we can actually rotate this graph and get a lattice. The lowest is the minimum DPP and the maximum. And given two DPP, we can easily figure out which is the DPP that can maximize, can satisfy both, and which is the lowest DPP for this both. This lattice is actually used in our later optimization framework. OK, so here is an example about how DPP changes through these shuffling stages. So from the beginning, we conservatively think that the input data has no DPP at all, or ad hoc. And then the first step in a shuffling step is to do some local sort. So given local sort, we have L sorted, which is a DPP within a same partition. And then the second step is here we do some hash partition on this record. Then we got this disjoint DPP. And finally, there's our third step in the shuffling, which do some merge sort with the data from multiple machines. And then we got this p-sorted DPP for this output data from the shuffling step. OK, so this is a more systematic graph. So basically, it tells how DPP changes through shuffling steps. Or another question is how to achieve certain DPP using some steps of shuffling steps. So we can actually partially remove some steps of in a shuffling, not necessarily always three steps. So for in this case, for example, we have a disjoint already. We want to achieve clustered. Then the only step we want is actually the local sort. And the partition and the merge sort are not necessary in this case. That's how we actually optimize the shuffling stages. And here's a more complete graph about the transition among all these shuffling, these DPP, and also an even more complete one. OK. So for functional properties, we actually did not pick them randomly. There are some data partition DPP as already defined here. So we want to find some functional properties that are sufficient and necessary that's corresponding to this DPP. So we have come out with this one, strictly monotonic, one-to-one, and monotonic. So basically, they are talking about how output column depends on its input column, which is defined in this user-defined function. Their meaning is actually, it can be easily understood by their names. Oh, by the way, there's actually, we have a proof about this sufficiency and necessary, but not in the paper, in the tech report, which can be found in our website. There's a proof about that. To further break that, we actually define a set of special cases for this functional properties, which are used in our later descriptions. One is the pass-through, which is a special case for strict monotonic, which means that the column is not changed at all. It's simply copied to the output. And for monotonic, there's two kinds of monotonic. One is increasing, another is decreasing. So we have both for strict monotonic and monotonic. There were further categories. OK, so here's how DPP changes through user-defined functions, given that we can extract the functional properties from these user-defined functions. So for example, we have already g-sorted DPP as the input of these user-defined functions. And if we can know that this user-defined function has passed through a strict monotonic functional property, and then we can actually tell that the output data of this use-defined function is still g-sorted. And if this use-defined function has one-to-one functional properties, then we can say that the output of this use-defined function has classed the DPP. And also, here is a case for monotonic. And for the other cases, we let go to ad hoc, which means that there's no DPP at all for the output of these use-defined functions. And here is a more complete version. So with given these two transition graphs about the DPP transformation through the shuffling steps and through the use-defined functions, we can come up some example optimization flow. So still the previous example, there are three steps in our optimization flow. The first one is to collect the data shuffling requirements based on the given execution plan. So for example, for the second shuffling stage, we need the data classed on UI prime. And for the shuffling stage, we needed to make sure the data is classed on URL. And the second step is to forward DPP propagation based on transition graph about DPP change across the user-defined functions. So the input data is considered to be ad hoc on URL in this case. And the first local processing, we don't extract any functional property at all, so the output will still be ad hoc. And for the second local processing, the input data is already classed on URL prime. And then since reverse is a one-to-one function, so then we can easily get that the output of the second local processing is classed on URL prime. And then the third step is to figure out the shuffling delta based on this transition graph about DPP change across the shuffling. So for the first case, we want the DPP from ad hoc URL to classed URL. So actually, all the three steps are needed. We have no optimization opportunity for the first shuffling stage. But for the second stage, we need the data property DPP from classed on URL prime to classed on URL prime. So there's nothing to do. So the second stage can be completely removed in this case. The actual optimization algorithm can be is much more complicated because we have to deal with the forks and the joins, et cetera. Details can be found in our paper. OK, so one thing I just missed is to how to identify the functional properties. So first, we actually extract the AST abstract syntax tree for the user-defined functions. For this case, the left one is AST for a simple use-defined function, which given the hour, we want to convert it to a day, convert it to day. So this is AST for the use-defined function. On the right side, there's deduction rules. We actually use some rule-based deduction to extract these functional properties. So first, we assume that for each input column, itself is a pass-through function over itself. So basically, the output is not changing at all. It will simply copy this hour out. So hour is a pass-through function of hour. And then during the analysis for AST, we recognize that 24 is a constant. And then for this divide operation, we actually have two rules here. The first rule says that given any pass-through function of some variable t, then it must be also an increase function over the variable t. This is directly deduced from the DPP lattice because pass-through is stronger than increase. And for the DIV divide operation, we have special rules there. It says that if y is an increase function over t and x is a constant, then we can easily get that z is also an increase function over t. So that with these two rules, we can easily get that the result of r divided by 24 is an increase function over r. So the same thing applied to the floor function with this rule. And then there's an assign rule, which basically tells that any DPP can be easily copied to the left hand of this equal assign operator. So finally, we get this user-defined function actually is an increase function over the input column hour. So basically, there are actually four kinds of deduction rules here. One is the pass-through, which is assumption about the input columns. Then we can deal with three kinds of different elements in the AST. One is a constant, we directly recognize that. Then is this standard instruction operators in .NET, like assign, like div stuff. We have special rules for all of them. And then there is a flaw, which is a third-party library call. We actually write several rules, with tens of rules for this frequently used third library calls. And finally, there are also some influence rules to reduce the number of rules that's required by this detection process. Okay, so the implementation of this process have two components. One is the UDF analyzer. We use the Phoenix from Microsoft to extract AST. And we use the BDDBDDB, which is a BDD-based deductive database, very efficient one for the program analysis as a detection engine. And another component is pseudo-related to the real optimizer, which real optimization, which takes the input, takes the output of the original optimizer as the input and produce an optimized one and feedback to the original optimizer. Okay, so here is some evaluation results. We extract about 10K jobs from the production bed in 2010 and 11, and inside these jobs, there are about 200,000 user-defined functions, and we actually focus on the relationship of one column that is purely dependent on one input column. For the other cases, like one output column that is dependent on more than one input column, they are not covered in our current implementation yet. So total, in total, there are about 2 million such pairs. And our analysis result shows that pass-through is actually a dominant functional properties, which contribute about 84%. And we can actually analyze about 91% of these pairs. Their functional properties can be correctly extracted. And for the other case, we can do as the origin optimizer, just to think of them, conservative think of them, they don't have any functional property at all. And so our optimizer actually can, our optimizer can actually optimize this only these eligible jobs. By means of eligible, I mean these jobs that contains more than one shuffling stages. Because currently, we assume that the input data are all ad hoc. Then the first shuffling stages, we don't find any opportunity because the first shuffling stage is a place where generated some data property, DPP. And from the second shuffling stages, we can have find some opportunities there. So among 2,200 eligible jobs, we find that we can optimize about 70.5% of them. These jobs can be optimized by pseudo. We also take some typical jobs from Bing to do some effectiveness study. These jobs involve from hundreds to thousands of machines, and the shuffling I/O is about from one terabyte to 60 terabytes. And we actually can reduce the shuffling stages a lot from 2 to 1 to and 6 to 4, 3 to 1. The result is the shuffling I/O reduction is very significant for these three cases. And the latency reduction is, however, not proportional for this shuffling I/O reduction. Normally, they should be, but for the third case, the latency is actually increased instead of being reduced. This problem is actually introduced by a data skill, which is talked in the previous talk. This is because the second shuffling stage is removed. And although our optimization actually keeps the safety or correctness of this semantic, a side effect of shuffling state is to rebalance the record so that the latest computation phase can be more balanced. But we remove that shuffling stage, so we have some performance impact. Fortunately, this kind of data skill can only happen with two certain conditions. One is range partition, and another is when our optimizer redefines the partition keys, which is more advanced optimization that is not covered in this talk, but you can find the details in our paper. In these two cases, we will introduce data skill with small probability, but this kind of optimization is quite uncommon, because most cases we say use hash partition and we do not redefine the partition functions. So this kind of scenario is the real case. Okay, so some related work. Data partition property propagation to reduce shuffling stages. One of our co-authors, Jingren, actually has a paper on that, on SDE10, and it can deal with all these declarative relational languages, operators, but it can only make conservative assumptions about use-defined functions. They treat them as black boxes. And for the sect which apply program analysis to distributed parallel computation, there's manual work from PVLDB, which extracted the selection and filter, projection and the filter from these use-defined functions, and build some early index to make the input I/O smaller. I think our approach, we share the same vision, and the focused problem is different. OK, so to summarize, this is an interdisciplinary research area. It involves database system and the PL. And this is a very nice place where we can leverage the PL techniques to advance data out of these two fields. So basically, this is because the system building is always a trade-off. So if you want to ease the engineering, you have to sacrifice some kinds of certain level of performance. But for example, you want to reuse these components, this use-defined function, you have to sacrifice some certain level of performance. This is quite difficult for human being to optimize, but it's a very nice place for PL to kick in and then save this performance back. So actually, pseudo is just the beginning of the work, and we are expecting to see more work along this line of the research. Yeah, so that's the end of the talk. Thanks.
I have a question in between fighting with the music. By the way, you carried that on very well. It seems like I was wondering how much your functional properties are kind of very connected to the particular partitioning part of your system. And if you can comment on that, and if there are other partitioning algorithms you might want that might lead to different functional properties, so forth.
I'm sorry.
So you were talking about a particular partitioning algorithms that you found in use. And I was wondering what the functional properties that you looked at, how much they were dependent on them. So, okay.
So
but were there other data partitioning properties that you found to be useful, or this kind of, it was a very impressive list of UDFs you found, by the way. Were there other partitioning properties people used, or was it basically just these three?
So actually, we have experienced a long way to define what kinds of functional properties we needed to extract. Based on the data partition properties are actually quite more systematic in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And we try to find some functional product that is sufficient and necessary, and then can be easily mapping back to the DPP. In the end, we can only find these three. And for the other cases, because these three are actually the output of the real implementation in the shuffling stage. The three shuffling steps that will all usually generate these three kinds of, for the other cases, they are actually introduced by some use-defined functions that can mm-hmm. not be explicitly generated by using those shuffling steps.
Okay.
So they are intermediate result state.
Thanks. Okay, well, with that, let's thank the speaker once more.
Thank you.